Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
It's a hanging garden. But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999 from a smart house here in 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybar.
And I'm Phyllis Cove.
And with us today is Emma Stefanski from Thrillist. Thank you so much for joining us on this smart pod. The irony is my house is kind of smart. Like, I have a little app that turns some shit on. So
Does it talk to you? Does it talk to you?
The house doesn't talk. Okay, no. Well, no, we're not there yet.
Well, how smart can it be?
What? Hey, you know, it's a mute house, but that doesn't
what
mean
I,
anything.
I think it's amazing is how little we've learned from Smart House in terms of it's kind of a cautionary tale. And
Well, they don't learn anything. They don't learn anything either. To get ahead of us, but
yeah, no, please.
They I'm just gonna go ahead and spoil Smart House.
I know.
They do keep the house.
They keep the house. You know, we did Back to the Future part two yeah. Yesterday with Emily Vanderwerf. Mm-hmm. A very similar film. And both films have smart homes in them.
This is true.
Both films have things that come out of the roof or ceiling giving you your food.
And then it talks to them too in that.
The house talks to them and they talk to the house. And both films kind of don't learn the lesson, which is like, well, you know, in the like we can like fix this and like keep everything good about things, but none of the bad things.
Nope.
Right.
I think this should have ended like like the play
Little Shop of Horrors, or the musical Little Shop of Horrors, awesome. where the world ends because of the smart house, and not like the movie where they're like, we can kill the smart house and like kind of also keep everything that's good about our lives.
Lobotomize the smart house.
There's also something about the fact that Pat is still kind of mischievous at the end. Like she's basically proven like, I'm going to pull this shit again. Like, I don't get the impression that Pat's learned anything from this either.
Well, they use the same footage of her face as they use when she first materializes herself. It's the exact same clip on the little, like, fridge TV or wherever she is, like, smiling at them.
Yeah.
This movie's not that bad. This movie's
not that bad. You've already turned around.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
My job here is done.
I literally said to Emma, your goal today is to try to turn Kenny around on Smart House, and you've been on for less than 7 minutes and you've done it. It's amazing.
Well, I had
anyway,
to...
I'll see you guys later. I gotta go to dinner.
Our shortest job, episode
Emma.
Ever.
I watched an hour of this before the pod with Emily yesterday, not really, you know, putting it all together. And then I watched the last half hour after, and Phil texted me in between my watching, and he said, "Smart House is weird." And I said, "It's terrible. It's like it's an abomination." And that was before Katie Seagal materialized in not the flesh, but in the you know, kind of rendered digitally as a hologram, and it got kind of okay.
I have to say, I watched this with my roommate who I think is probably around your age, Emma. She has seen this no less than 50 times. She was on her phone the whole time, knew all the lines of dialogue. I started watching this film, and the first thing that hits you is the production value is really kind of the thing that it's hard. You can give it a thumbs up all you like, Emma. It is...
looks great. The weird robot arm.
Let's do this differently. All right. So unfortunately, I wasn't on the Xenon.
Xenon. Yes. Yes.
Ooh.
Which I assume
also
is another,
written by the same writer.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And I read about him. He sounds like an interesting guy.
He does.
I assume that just based on the fact that you were writing for Smart House, I assume you would also write for Xenon.
100%.
Right. Ride in a spaceship for Xenon.
Did you even think for a second about it?
No. You said Xenon, and my brain just like... Psh, 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 psh,
psh, psh. Yes.
Zoom, 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 zoom.
Zoom, zoom, boom, boom, my super...
Yeah.
As Phil has alluded to, we're old. And you appear to be more of a young. And I'm not saying that based on, you know, anything physical, just based on the fact that you just danced to Zoom, Zoom, Zoom from Xenon. Mm-hmm.
So, no, that's valid.
What's up with this shit? What happened in the years when I graduated from the Disney Channel to Nickelodeon that wrought this thing that has you dancing to something that is as ridiculous to me as my kids doing TikTok dances to fucking
anything.
Songs about $1,000 pants, which are not actually about $1,000 pants, I've learned.
So, Emma, what can you tell us about the Z-O-M?
I think I'm too old for that. I think I'm now in the middle of this. Gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you want me to explain the DCOM phenomenon?
Kind of.
That's right. Desperately.
What is it? I guess maybe the better question is, what did it mean to you when you were a kid? And we can extrapolate from that.
I know you could answer that question, what it meant to you. But you are a film journalist.
Yes.
And I want you to journalism this for me a little bit. What is this shit? Is my question.
I should have written a five paragraph essay to bring for you guys.
No.
I
mean, top of the dome.
I think it's just like it's a combination of it's on TV for you, all you know, and they were really they really saturated during the day the ads for whatever movie would be on at night. It was always on at night at 8 p.m. That was when the Disney Channel original movie would be on, and all day you would be like it's Smart House is on, Smart House is on. I can still remember the lines, how the trailer was arranged with clips from the movie. Because while I was watching the movie, I was also doing the thing that your roommate was doing where she was like saying the lines like without even paying attention. But there are certain lines from the movie that are also in the trailer that I know from the trailer, like presented in that way. Weirdly, because I've just seen the trailer so many times, it would just be every other commercial.
And just there were only a certain amount of these, right? Like there was a rotation.
There were a thousand.
Correct? Oh, there. Okay, so there were. Okay, so there wasn't.
There were a lot. Okay. I mean, for a while, yeah. I mean, when they only had like 20 or 30 of them, because I guess they would come out with maybe 10 a year. Well, probably more like 5 a year. And then they kind of ramped it up because they realized that kids were actually watching these. and because they're the, because
the
they're
kids
good
will
movies.
Eat whatever you feed them. Well, that's the question, I guess.
I guess, I don't mean to cut you off, Kenny, but I do feel like, so there, it feels as though there are a couple DCOMs that stand out. I know that Xenon was a big one. I know that Smartest was a big one. Again, proving yet again that 99 was a very big year for a lot of different types of things. But it feels like that these are the two that people talk about the most that I within at least my echo chamber, what have you. I guess I'm just unclear as to why these two.
Well, you're missing something. Okay, okay, yes. In our echo chamber,
yes,
where when anybody has news about the year 1999, they come to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are definitely into these two movies.
That's true.
You,
that's true.
You also can't discount High School Musical, which is a DCOM.
That was a juggernaut.
High School Musical 2, which is just like on a different plane.
Yeah,
and then this is no joke. My twins right now are in a production of The Descendants, which is also a DCOM. The three movies.
Not the Alexander Payne film.
Not the Alexander. Yo, straight up. Descendants 1 and 2 are much better than Alexander Payne's Descendants. Descendants 3 is like on the level.
To be clear, Kenny also hates Alexander Payne. So we should take everything with a grain of salt.
Okay.
So.
But I know, Emma, have you ever watched The Descendants?
I actually did. I have two friends who are Disney adults and they will just,
now you have three.
And it was sort of like as a bit, but we kind of enjoyed them. Like I went over to their apartment. This was during quarantine, during lockdown, when I had like, we were sort of a pod together. And so I went over there and we would watch like National Treasure or The Mummy or something. And then we kept bringing up The Descendants sort of like as a joke. And then one night we were just like, let's just watch them. And yeah, they're, you know, I absolutely understand why kids really, really like them. I think I probably would really, really like them if I was like 10 as well.
I mean, I think they're brilliant in their, not this is about The Descendants, but I think they're brilliant in their conception. I think they're brilliant in their execution. I think they're, you know, made for the consumption of children like my children. And I know every word to every song of them. Oh, my daughter got Evie. Isn't that exciting? And my son got Carlos.
What?
I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming those are big parts.
Niece is Maleficent. Isn't this so exciting? Kristen Chenoweth is Maleficent.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. All right. So whatever. You guys can all see it. It's a yada 2 weeks. I'll send you all the link.
Can't wait.
The point is, yes, the point is there are some of these DCOMs that definitely stick out. Like,
yes.
But this is what we're talking about right now is like kind of the beginning of this, right, Emma?
Yeah.
It wasn't first one. I think they'd been doing them for a few years before this. Yeah. But this is definitely the one that's always number one on all the lists. It's always the one everyone's like, yep, Smart House, seen that, love that one.
Yeah, I mean, in doing the bare amount of research I could on Smart House and kind of seeing what is out there on the internet about it, it does feel as though a lot of sort of Disney Channel original movie lists have been made. Entertainment Weekly did one. They picked this as number one. And then Collider did one. And this was parked actually at number three. They picked this as number three. So I don't know. I don't quite know what number one and two were. But it does feel like it's a
Citizen
big movie. It's what did you say it was last night? You texted me, Kenny.
Well, no,
said,
this is real. This is no joke. It's just a remake of 2001 in a house.
It's also, so I don't know if you guys knew this, but this is actually based on a short story by Ray Bradbury.
Yes.
Is that true? Like, is that true or is that a coincidence?
It's the Velt, isn't it?
It's the Velt, yeah.
It's the Velt, yes.
Yeah. The writer of this has not acknowledged that.
That's what I'm getting at.
So it's hard to say whether or not. Yeah. Now, I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to admit it, but like, I would admit it too.
Yeah.
But I also feel as though.
I'd admit it with middle fingers in the air. I'd be like, you think smart ass is stupid? It's for the Velt, bitches.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I don't know whether or not it's... I mean, it's hard not to see the similarities between the two things, but I mean, whatever.
I'd definitely be surprised if it wasn't at least an homage. Like, they have that whole thing. Like, the whole thing with the Velt is these people, this family lives in a house that's smart. Mm-hmm. And they have a nursery with walls that are like video screens.
Yeah,
and the kids like the African savanna part of the nursery. And they do that in the movie. That's the first thing that the house does for them.
Yeah. Sounds like Stu Krieger might not have wanted to pay any money to the Bradbury estate.
Well, yes. You don't have to.
I'm just saying.
It's a homage. But,
well, you say it's based on it, doesn't someone come at you with a lawsuit?
I'm sure Ray Bradbury was watching the Disney Channel fuming every Saturday at 8 p.m.
Cursing Smart House.
If he called it the Velt, and the house I think is called like, it's called something very specific, like the Happy Time. No, like the Happy Time House or something. Or Happy, something like that. If you did that, I think you'd be in trouble.
All right, fair enough.
Ray Bradbury didn't even come up with this idea, I would imagine.
Sure. It's a haunted house idea. I mean, essentially, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I
do want to give just a little bit of context for our listeners who might not have seen Smart House. Anyone who's listening to this episode, I can only assume has watched Smart House. But teenager wins a fully automated dream house in a competition, but soon the computer controlling it begins to take over and everything gets out of control. Ben must then calm the computer named Pat. I swear to you, that is Google's synopsis of Smart House, which you would think would be more, I don't know, detailed considering... You know, that it's the subject matter, but it is what it is. Written by William R. Hudson and Stu Krieger, directed by, as we've mentioned, LeVar Burton. It aired on the Disney Channel for the first time on June 26th, 1999. This feels like as good a time as any to unpack the LeVar Burton hot take that Kenny has about LeVar Burton. Okay, well, before we get to your feelings about his trying to become the host of Jeopardy, which I am all for, I didn't know that LeVar Burton had directed as much television as he has. I mean, he did a fair amount of Star Trek episodes. He did a handful of, I believe, NCISs or something along those lines.
Before this, he had only done Star Trek.
Correct.
And maybe one other thing.
Yeah.
And then this.
Yes.
You know. Okay.
I guess my point is, I don't know Star Trek well enough. Emma, I don't know if you are a big Star Trek person or not.
I'm in it. I'm there. I haven't seen every ep, like, no, by no means.
Right.
I know what I'm talking about.
He's directed probably around 15 or 20 episodes of Star Trek, which is no small feat, you know, it is what it is. is this film well directed?
No. Is
Well, I mean, I guess to come at it from a different angle, I have to. And I tried to do this as I was watching this last night, which is really try to put my brain into the mind of a person that this is aimed at, right?
My brain. Like,
Emma Stefanski's brain. I was trying to be Emma last night. And at least a younger person who this was aimed at. And I guess I just was sort of like, listen, aren't a lot of things that are aimed at kids relatively stilted? Like, aren't a lot of these performances, like, just comparing it to Xenon, like, they're basically of similar caliber in terms of direction and performance.
Yeah, they're probably both really bad. I mean, like, it's... No, and I don't mean that. That was too glib. I'm sorry. That was too glib. That's not what I mean.
I'm going to start a rival podcast.
It's going to be like, great. Just for my Smart House.
Smart House podcast. Right. Tune in. Coming next month.
No. I mean, like, obviously they're directed kind of badly.
For kids. Yeah.
I've worked on some shows where some people throw some, where some people are just there getting paychecks. And they like, this isn't the highest of high art. This is get the job done stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't really blame LeVar Burton for, you know, not framing the close-ups. Like, the close-ups are framed.
Yeah, they're crazy.
The close-ups, it's not close-ups. This is the fucking coverage. This is all they got.
Yeah, yeah. Can I just, I don't disagree with you, Kenny, that the thing that was the most jarring for me really was the shot composition. There's times where I just found myself going like, who decided this was the box that we should be seeing this? But
it just feels so Ed Woody. Like, it just feels like we got the shot.
Like, they couldn't afford Roger Deakins, so they had to go with the budget choice.
This is Disney. They could afford whoever they want.
Not in 1999, maybe.
Could you imagine? You're right. Could you imagine being at Disney and working at like Disney Channel, making the Disney Channel original movies, and then them telling you, fucking the biggest entertainment conglomerate in the world, them telling you you have $60,000 to make this movie.
I mean, it's crazy. I guess my question to you, Emma, is more about sort of, I guess, like, why did you love it as a kid? Why do you still love it, just to be clear? What is it about this that really, did you want a smart house as a kid? Was this about like wish fulfillment for you?
I definitely, this was the most high-tech thing I have ever seen in my life as a child.
Sure.
And I like went on this tear for years of like designing gadgets to like improve my life. And it was all stuff that like complete, you know, I don't know what it was. I wish I could think of
what like Inspector Gadget type stuff.
Yeah, just stuff like that, like and like stuff like a kitchen counter that makes smoothies for you, like things like that. And I'd be like, how would this have worked? Not that I'm mechanically minded at all.
Right.
My computer just turned itself off and back on again. So
it did. For our listeners, there was a moment when Emma just disappeared because her computer just said fuck off.
Oh, you're not keeping that in. Okay, great.
No, we're not gonna keep that in. But so it sounds like you just tried to figure out.
I have no idea.
You were trying to figure out ways to make your house a smart house.
And like that sort of thing really interested me. I thought it was really cool. And of course, I'd been kind of indoctrinated into thinking that it was cool by watching this movie as many times as I had. I think that there was also this sense of familiarity to it that like mm-hmm. I liked it as a kid watching it yesterday. I hadn't seen it in many years. Mm-hmm. I had a great time. I can't say if it held up because it's so in my brain. Mm-hmm. That like everything that happens in it, I'm like, yes, of course, that's logical because that's what happens in the movie. I can't like separate that anymore.
Can I just come on record and say that there is nothing logical about this movie? I just want to go on record that is an amazing thing that as a kid you were programmed to believe that this was completely logical. That's all I'm saying.
Phil, of course the house would watch a bunch of 50s sitcoms and then make an evil hologram. That's what happens.
That's maybe my favorite part of this movie, by the way. The party's the best part.
I really liked how all the 50s sitcoms were all the dad sitcoms that were just changed out with moms. Like Big Room for Mommy or Mom Knows Best. I found this movie to be deeply misogynistic, but it's okay.
It's okay. Like,
deeply anti-mom, but
or very pro-mom. I'm not sure. Like pro a certain type of mom. You don't think this movie's like pro 50s mom?
The villain of the movie was a 50s mom come to life.
Yeah, but then they learn to love her at the end. Or tame her.
Because she stopped being like that.
Yeah.
Because she
women need to learn their place. They need to learn their place in the fridge TV in the kitchen. That's where they need to be.
In the kitchen.
Literally fridging her. So they can literally fridging the mom.
For a younger, hotter wife mom.
Exactly.
It was, you know, look, I don't care about that.
And because I watched it when I was a child, that's what I think now. This is what I believe.
That's right. You've been indoctrinated.
It's fantastic.
I can't wait to be a Frisbee.
Disney
mom.
Works.
So can I just say, I know, Kenny, that you did a little bit of research on Stu Krieger, or at least did a little bit of reading up on him. He visited the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory to research technology featured in Smart House and his other film, as we mentioned, Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century.
I want to know what that tech is. I want to know what he researched. Because if they're making that shit in JPL, I want to know.
They're making fridge bombs at NASA. But so he was cognizant of the future technology and said, I just looked at where we'd been, where we were, and imagined where we'd probably be headed. He's not wrong on a technology perspective, since we have all sorts of smart houses now to some degree. Yeah. Kenny has a smart house. He was bragging about it before we got on mic.
Pretty smart over here.
The smartest of houses is Kenny's.
That window is a hologram, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not real.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's not. Yes, this is what I've decided to put outside my window.
Just a blown out.
This is what I chose. A white wall with some weeds on it.
I do think, though, that there's something to. I mean, I don't want to give Stu Krieger too much credit. I don't think he predicted like smart house. It's that hard to imagine a smart house, but I do think that we've learned nothing from this movie.
I think the phrase smart house, I think, was probably around before. Just like people imagining like how we would live and how we are living, really. Like we've all got little Google Homes or Alexas that we talk to, that we tell to do things and they do things for us.
I think, did you look at Stu Krieger's, filmography?
No, can you walk
He wrote it? The Land Before Time, which is a classic.
That's a great movie. I don't know if Emma liked it or if it just emotionally scarred.
Yeah. Littlefoot, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, it's brutal.
Super sad.
That's it. That's all he ever really did. He did one other thing that.
But he did. He did
Monkey Trouble. He did Monkey Trouble. He did In the Army Now. He's done a lot of really kind of. I mean, it's amazing. He did Land Before Time, which really is a classic, and it's Don Bluth and all that stuff. But
he did write three movies that you know are bearing walls of Emma's adolescence or childhood. That is Land Before Time, Xenon, and this. I mean, Stu Krieger. You know,
he was all over my job. Yeah. In a way, those three movies are like three movies that I can quote still.
You know what's kind of funny? Mm. You've said this a few times, Phil. We've learned nothing from Smart House. Have we learned anything from any movie ever?
No.
Should we as artists
stop
trying to teach people shit?
It's a lost cause, you guys.
It's a lost cause. I mean, because if there's any movie that was going to teach us anything, it's this movie probably, because this.
That's the poor quote of this episode, Kenny.
It preys upon, I'm not even joking. It preys upon the young, supple minds, the impressionable minds still forming their neural pathways.
Yes.
And they can actually potentially redirect them in a more humanistic direction. Mm-hmm. But it had the exact opposite effect. Because Emma saw this movie and started
trying to build a smart house.
Trying to program blenders into her walls. So I'm sure you know who I bet loves this movie? Mm. Elon Musk. I bet he's a big fan.
It probably inspired him to do the work that he does. When he saw this movie, he was like, this is what I want to do. I want to marry Grimes and I want to
I was just going to say, Grimes definitely likes Smart House.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Sure.
She wants to transform herself into a fridge hologram for sure.
100%.
What if she hasn't already?
There are undoubtedly, this is the kind of movie I think where there are undoubtedly like a lot of celebrity fans. Mm-hmm. I wonder who they are. Like Grimes for sure. No question.
Grimes for sure. You know who is not a fan of this movie is Brie Larson, because she auditioned for the role of Angie and didn't get it. So she's probably
When she was seven?
What?
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. She would have killed it.
She would have been great.
She would have crushed it. I actually thought Angie was great. Like,
she's
no
so
doubt.
Good.
Like,
too.
Yeah.
Her delivery
my favorite
was really
character,
great.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was great. I think this movie suffered a little bit. Again, you know. I mean, it was already like, you know, it was already like the body bag was already 3/4 of the way zipped up, but suffered a little bit from the Ben casting. I don't like his
classic
look.
DCOM actor Ryan Merriman.
Was he in a bunch of them?
Stuff?
He's in the 13th year, which is about a merman. And he's
Merriman
in
played a merman.
Luck of the Irish, which is another sort of one that's always up there on the lists.
Is it about a like he found a leprechaun?
Yeah, actually, it is about that.
I love that you just guessed that. You're like,
and I think, hold on, let me make sure that I'm right about
this. Great idea. Yeah, I mean, the only, you know, leprechaun.
I posted about this as I was watching this last night. There were a couple things that kind of hit me as I was watching this. The first is, like, this could be a legitimate Blumhouse horror film. I'm surprised that someone has not just remade it as a horror film, because it gets pretty terrifying at the end, if you ask me. But I also feel like it's got a little bit of WandaVision in it, too, mm-hmm. in terms of the early episodes of WandaVision when we're in the 50s and all that kind of stuff. Like, this movie's got stuff. Like, it's not as though there isn't some good stuff in it. I'm just not convinced that, like, it's got the money or the talent behind it in order to, like, fully execute it. But, like, I didn't hate it by any means. I just was sort of like, I imagine, as I said, I imagine if I was 10 years old, this movie would be great. Did you watch this with your kids, Kenny, or did they not watch this?
I wouldn't subject my kids to
your kids might love this movie. They might love it.
Well, you know, you know, and my you know, and our listeners know that my kids are kind of snobs.
In the best way.
They would have been so turned off by the video that was used. Yeah. You know, I was clearly shot on, like, I think camcorder. So I think they would have been turned off by that. They would have been turned off by the visuals.
Remember when you took them to see Cats, Kenny?
Yeah, we walked out.
Your children walked out of Cats?
My children demanded we walk out of Cats. My son still holds it up at all times as the worst movie he's ever seen. And the worst thing, like, what are the worst things I've ever done with him tonight? Not tonight. I'm a little screwed up because I'm taking him to see Space Jam 2 tonight. And I'm very
well. That might also be a whole other thing.
I'm concerned how that's going to go.
Cats out of the running.
It might.
Worst.
We'll see. He really, and you know, look, I went on a long rant before Cats about how much I hate Cats.
Yeah. The musical, like, Cats.
I hate Cats the musical deeply.
Yeah.
I think it's the worst. So I certainly wasn't, like, forcing this upon them, right? But, like, we saw the trailer before something. We like The Greatest Showman. And we
great
saw
movie.
The
tra- great I stand.
Film. We saw the trailer before something. And, like, my daughter was like, I want to see that. So I'm like, great. That'll kill 2 hours. So we went to go see Cats, and my son immediately, who's not, again, like, he likes weird shit. You know, his favorite movie is Die Hard with a Vengeance. His second is Parasite. So you never know what this kid's going to be into.
He's 9, Emma, just for the record.
This reminds me, honestly, of the critical discourse around the first season of Big Little Lies, when everyone was like, no child listens to music that sophisticated. Like, the soundtrack is really good in that show. And it's the children who are, like, on the phones, like, picking, like, Bon Iver or whatever they're listening to. It's like, no child listens to that.
Yeah. So, my children are, like,
your children are cool.
My daughter is cool, but watches Sophia the First. And my son is,
I don't know
awesome.
What that is,
but
he
and
no,
he watches.
My son is awesome, but he's unusual. And, like, something weird happened because, when, you know, he's like, his name is Rollins, and he only wants to watch R movies, which are rated R for Rollins, in his opinion. And
sure.
when Godzilla and King Kong, Godzilla versus King Kong came out, I thought I was, like, kind of being a dick and also kind of a funny dad. I'm like, look, you can watch Godzilla and King Kong if you watch the originals with me. So he's like, sure, whatever. Yeah, let's do it. So we watched Godzilla, and I got the version with subtitles, not the dubbing. Yeah. And, like, for some reason, he's like, I love Asian cinema. So now we watch all these Asian films with subtitles. Minari's obviously an American film, but you know, three quarters subtitles. And he's like, Minari, like that's the greatest film ever. Like, I don't know how Nomadland was. Like, it had to be. He's like, Nomadland. Seriously. He's like, me and mommy agree that Nomadland looks really good. Mm-hmm. But Minari's really the best film of the year.
I don't think they like Smart House.
He wouldn't have liked Smart House, but my daughter might have liked it if gave her enough snacks.
Emma, there is some needle drops in this film.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Were you a big Bewitched fan when you were a kid?
No. But that was the only song. One that I knew because it's in this movie.
C'est la vie.
The other big one is the house is jumping, which
the house is jumping. The coolest song.
They played it four times.
Yep.
Well, the house jumped four times.
To be fair, the house is jumping. But I mean, what are your again? This comes back to sort of. The music of DCOMs, which was a big thing too. Like Xenon has some big music in it too. Did you own this music? Were you into this music at the time as well?
I didn't own it. I don't think I knew that you could do that. Because if I knew that, then I definitely would have.
Okay.
I think some relative gave me like the That's So Raven soundtrack, which is just songs that are featured in the show sometimes. And then like other songs that they couldn't afford to put in the show, but are on the CD anyway. This music I didn't have. And I wasn't even sure if it was like real music, like if they had composed it for the movie, which I think that they did at least once, if not for most of it.
Yes.
I thought it was cool. I thought the music was awesome.
Not to go off topic again. Do you love a Goofy movie?
Yeah. Okay. It's good. I haven't seen it in a really long time, but I am positive. I feel positive about that.
Yeah, a Goofy movie is another kind of one of these things that I was just a little too old for, but it's just beloved by people, you know, 5 to 15 years younger than me. It's good, but the music in that's very good.
Yes, the music in that is really good, yeah.
Yes. That's why I thought of it.
I wish you all could have seen Emma's facial reaction to that. It was very, very exciting.
You can if you subscribe
to our Patreon.
Worth it.
Absolutely worth it.
It is worth it.
Can we just talk for a quick second about Ben's emotional arc in this film? Because it's kind of disturbing.
He hates women. The only woman he likes is his mom.
He's dead. He's like, the only good woman's a dead woman.
It's like, would you?
It's
a fridged woman.
I was talking specifically about my mom who's dead, you asshole.
So just so people are clear, Ben wants to get the smart house to essentially replace his mom.
Yes.
Because in his brain, his mom is a house.
I would disagree with you on that.
That his mom is house things, is like the various things that have to be done in a house.
Moms cook for you, moms clean for you, moms are nice to you. That's all they do, and that's all they need to do. And when they're done with that, you put them in the little mom closet, and they're
right. Like at one point,
this all sounds great.
At one point, Ben says to his dad, "Pat is going to give us all the mom stuff we need."
Well, because he's scared that his dad is going to replace, you know, his mom that he loved with another stranger who he's not going to like. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Right.
It's a very like familiar arc in a Disney movie, I feel like. I feel like a lot of them kind of did that.
This is going to sound so dumb. It's a little more sophisticated than you gave me credit for, Phil.
That might be true.
I don't think that's necessarily what Ben thinks. Okay. I think that's what Ben thinks his dad thinks, right?
Okay.
I think Ben, all the mom stuff we need, I don't think he's saying, this is what I think. He's saying, Dad, you don't need to bring another woman into this house.
Because this house
can do everything you need from a mom, because he has no concept of what a wife is. And he only has this like He only has this like 7 year old's understanding. Cause remember, Angie didn't really even remember mom. So he only has this like 7 or 8 year old's understanding of what a mom does, which is like, you know, tuck you in or whatever she does for you.
Right.
But she has no concept of anything beyond that. So I don't really fault Ben or the, you know, the characterization of Ben in this regard. I think this is like a stilted kid's idea of how we replace the mom. And in that respect, I think there is some growth and I think there is a kind of fully formed character arc.
I agree with
for
that.
Ben.
From I think, if you look at it from that vantage point, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yes. I think that, you know, the larger theme of, you know, technology, AI technology is good as long as it stays in its lane. and we can keep it in its lane is a little, you know, not so much like problematic or troubling. It's just kind of like, you know, dumb.
I mean, that statement makes sense. Like it's useful to us as long as it doesn't, you know, get a mind of its own.
Right. Yeah, like at the end, you have the big
sell
sort
our
of,
data for every.
And you want to know what, Emma? That's what I actually believe.
Yeah,
that's like in my heart. Like I don't sit here. I don't really sit here thinking. Like I like to fuck around a little bit and tell people that there's going to be a robot apocalypse and we're going to, you know, fall victim to AI and all that stuff. But like, if I really thought that, I would get rid of all my shit. And I don't. I told you, I have a smart house. I have a hologram wall behind me.
Yeah.
So I actually do think that we can kind of control this stuff. Am I stupid? So many listeners right now are like, yes, you're stupid. You're well, stupid and you're going down first.
I mean,
the tech bros listening to this podcast are like, oh, he has no idea what's coming.
My roommate
has no idea all the weird shit that we're going to put in his house.
I bought a Roomba and my roommate is convinced that it's a bad idea. And that, like, the Roomba is going to become sentient or something.
If you guys can't defeat a sentient Roomba,
I agree.
Then you deserve to lose.
I agree. I agree.
I tend to like anthropomorphize things like that. But like a Roomba, oh, they're so cute. They scuttle around on the floor.
They're alive.
Oh, they're really cute.
I always say thank you to Siri just in case. Because if they do rise up, I want them to remember this one was polite.
Emma's the one who says nice. Who says nice things. I always think of like the Child's Play movies. I'm like, yo, if you can't be Chucky, you deserve to die. Like, it's just that simple.
Chucky's scary, though. He's got a knife.
You got everything. You got every tool ever created by a man. He's got a knife he can barely wield.
Fair enough.
You can do the thing where you put your hand on like his forehead and he's like trying to get you, but his arms are too little.
I know. I think they do that in Leprechaun.
So speaking of the other woman, this woman, Sarah Barnes, has created the smart house.
She's so hot.
That's the moment that I really need to highlight here, which is that he looks at a picture of her in the paper and the dad goes, beautiful.
And Ben thinks he's talking about the house.
Ridiculous.
Because you're right. In Ben's mind, women are just buildings that you can project whatever you want onto.
Yeah.
Wow. And in Dad's mind, women are just sex objects.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. The cook.
He's got the house. He doesn't need it.
I love her character introduction in the very beginning of the movie where she has that like sidekick guy. I don't really know what his job is. Who's like, you need to, you know, get your head out of your computer and go on some dates. And then she's like listing all of her horrible ex-boyfriends.
And then she has like separation anxiety leaving the house. She's like, I don't know. I don't really want to go. And he's like, get a fucking life.
It's the maternal instinct. That's how you know she's a good candidate for the dad.
That makes sense.
Everything is so weird about this movie. I am pretty
disgusted with myself by saying that.
I appreciate the marketing thing. Of we're going to make a smart house. We're going to have a contest that 7,000 people are going to enter and we are going to give it away. But I don't understand why they didn't constantly like, you know, check in with them and make it because you're trying to keep this marketing thing alive. Right.
Yeah.
the other thing is, why isn't there another smart house or like a whole town of smart houses that you're actually trying to sell and make money on? This house probably costs upwards of $1 billion. I don't know much about money, but it seems like a billion-dollar home.
I also think I'm surprised only 7,000 people wanted it. I think there's probably more people that want it than 7,000 people. But
well, 7,000
of ben, those ben people, had, yeah. Right? He entered a lot of times, which I also thought was a little bit weird because as he's set up to be this like computer whiz kid, you'd think that he would create like some maybe program to do that for him instead of having to like log on. Oh God, I got to go on AOL and enter the contest again.
Did you notice he had a town email? The town was called like Morgan or something. It was like Ben at morgan.town.gov.
The internet back then is the fucking best. I just
it's
think
so it's, good. Oh, it's so good. I love 90s internet so much.
Oh. Yeah. This movie is the 90s internet of movies. And I think that's what it is. It's like a very, I understand the nostalgia for, you know, early internet for AOL and chat rooms and You've Got Mail and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I see the charm of it. I am kind of charmed by it myself, to be honest. I might watch it again with my kids and tell them it's a horror movie, and they might like it. If they think it's a horror movie,
yeah,
you know.
So
that's sophistication right there.
My niece is here too now. She's also in the play. She got Maleficent, as I said. She's 13, and we watch all the horror movies together. We're apparently going to watch It this week, which Phil couldn't watch with me in the theater.
I wouldn't go and see that. Thank you.
You want to come over and watch it?
No,
with my 13-year-old and 9-year-old.
That's fine. They're more courageous than I am, clearly.
But I think
if I saw that movie at 9, I would not be here right now. I would be under the earth.
You would be dead
in a bunker, terrified
under the earth.
I got bad news for you. Penny, that's where Pennywise
lives. Where you get this. That's where he hangs out.
You're right.
The one place you don't want to be. You should be out. You should be up with Bezos.
Yeah, I should be in space.
Bezos. Yeah.
In his penis rocket.
So at this point, Pat overhears them talking about fun and interprets and looks up fun, Googles fun, and what she comes up with is this party.
She says, party.
Party.
And which then, lives in my brain still, the way that she says it.
So then with Pat's help, Ben's crush comes over for the party, Gwen Petroni, and his bully Ryan also shows up because Pat wants him there so she can just straight up fucking torture him.
Absolutely.
As three people who have, let's say, you know, not name last names that would be in the top 1,000.
Sure.
Last names in America.
Correct.
I am very into last names like Petroni. Is that the name? And less into last names like Cooper. I'm very bored. Like I try to find that perfect little Petroni zone where like it's a name that's like enough of a name where you're not like, you know, being a total jerk about it, but it's not Cooper, which is just like, you know, I think if you're going like something like Cooper, you may as well just go Smith or Jones.
Yeah. Petroni's one. Petroni's a good one. I agree with you.
So I'm into Petroni.
Do you think she's a Gwendolyn or a Guinevere?
In
the canon of the
obviously a Gwyneth. Come on,
Gwyneth Petroni.
That's a great name.
Gwyneth Paltrow's like tethered.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's great.
His name is Gwen Petroni.
So Pat then electrically shocks
That's like,
Ryan.
You know, this might sound a little gross, Uh-oh. But whatever.
Okay. Uh-oh. Yeah.
It's not gonna sound that gross.
Okay, good.
But like if have you ever like told friends who you didn't go to high school with? Take this with a grain of salt, Emma. I was much worse as a younger person. The names of the hotter girls in your high school, and they're just like, "That's a hot girl name. That's a hot girl name." like how could I don't want to put her on blast,
yeah,
but
obviously not. Yeah.
How I will put two names together. How can Becky Wiener possibly be a hot girl? I'm like, you don't understand. Like we all just like prayed at the altar of Becky Wiener.
I mean, she sounds hot. The way that you're
describing. Yeah. It's like old Ben is like, oh, you wouldn't believe Gwen Petroni. And they're like, come on.
Gwen Petroni?
There's really? No chance.
Gwyneth Petroni.
I do. I would believe, if I had just heard the name Gwen Petroni, I would believe her as like a nerdy sort of glasses
yep.
type.
Yep.
Like Gwen Petroni.
Unless.
Was there homework tonight?
Unless this was 1987. Because uh-huh. like in a movie like Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, like uh-huh. I could see Gwen Petroni being like, knock oh, yeah. your socks off.
What was the name of the girl from Adventureland that she had like a name like this?
Kristen Stewart?
No, that okay. No.
I know Lisa who you're talking
P.
about.
Lisa P, but I don't remember what her last name was, what her full yeah. character. But they had like that idea of like that hot girl with a kind of weird name. But at this point in the movie, for what it's worth, Ryan gets electrically shocked by Pat. She then haunts him with this ghostly skull hologram thing, pokes him with her electronic arms and kicks him out of the party. And then Gwen Petroni kisses Ben. And like, it's a little oversexed, if I'm being completely honest, the way that she portrays it. I wasn't comfortable with it.
This movie's like a little bit horny.
It is, right?
For Disney, because you've got the dad and the lady scientist. Yes, like, Sarah, that's yeah. very romantic, all yeah. their scenes together. And then you have this, like, boy with this crush, and he gets kissed by her.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
crazy.
And she takes her, like, sweater off and throws it on a plant. Like, okay.
How is that proof there was a party, Emma?
I remember seeing this for the first time, being like, he could have just lied. He could have just told her she was, like, studying or something over yeah. here. How does he know automatically you kids did something?
How did Pat
That's
miss
not
that,
one of
though.
Your sweaters.
Also, how did Pat miss it? I mean, all of this
Come
makes
on,
yeah,
Pat.
It's lazy. It's lazy writing. It's lazy on every part. But so then,
I mean, can I just say?
Yeah,
I do want to bring up the fact that when his friends come over and he puts the video wall on, I think he uses the phrase kick butt video screens. I wrote Correct. That down.
Yep.
And it's a music video and they all start doing the dance.
Yep.
That yes. to me was friendship. That friendship is knowing a dance by a boy band and then doing it with your friends at a cool house party that you're not supposed to have. Like that was like, okay, this is wow. what high school is going to be like. Like for me watching this at whatever age I saw it. At.
Also,
is that what it was like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was okay, me and my cool friends doing a dance in a smart hat.
Cool. That's also a positive portrayal of male friendship.
Correct.
Because in my toxic male relationships, zero times have we unironically danced to anything.
And then later on in the party, they do like the Soul Train thing where they're all up in rows and they're, God. I thought that's what it was going to be like. And then high school parties are so lame. You're just sitting on couches, not talking to each
other. It's awful. They're awful.
The joke's on me is I now write for a dance show.
It's true. So Pat at this point becomes strict and overbearing because she overhears that they're basically like, Pat, they're like whispering, being like, Pat's getting too strong. We have to. And then she essentially, I mean, this is when the movie really becomes crazy. She metal doors come down. She bolts everything, which sound like bullets. All those bolts. Fucking weird. Yeah. And then
it's like in True Lies when the house gets riddled.
Yes. Yes. It is.
Yeah, it is.
It's it really is. So then Angie, this is one of my favorite parts. Angie gets sick before the shutdown happens. And then the dad wakes her up and Angie's like, wait, why are you waking me up? And I'm like, yeah, why are you waking Angie up? It's nothing you can do. You can't leave. Just let her sleep. I mean, it's just absurd.
Wake up, you need to panic with us. We're panicking and you have to be here too.
Panic with us.
Get your soup out of here. We got to freak out. That soup looks pretty tasty, by the way. I would eat that. She's like, oh, why soup? I love soup. I'm a big fan of soup. I would be so jazzed if a smart house made me soup.
What's your favorite soup, Emma?
I was going to ask the same question. Yeah. I'm so interested.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of tomato. Just basic.
Cream of tomato or tomato tomato?
Tomato tomato.
Okay. Thank God.
Like, come on.
Podcast would have ended if it was cream of tomato.
Kenny hates cheese.
Kicked me out of the soup.
Kenny hates cheese or sour cream or anything.
I love tomato soup. It's a great answer. But... anything
cream of mushroom is my favorite soup. So Kenny, that's why Kenny and I don't really get along.
Well, it's just, you know, you're cream on peaches.
Big dairy got ya.
Big dairy has its hooks in me so deep.
So I have a question for you guys about soup. Yeah.
This is a podcast about soup now.
I'm not saying this is my answer.
Yeah.
Does chili count as soup?
No.
It's always on the soup section. I know,
but it's not soup in my mind. But I can understand.
Like, this is
chili's
like
chili.
Chili's chili.
One of those, like, is a Pop-Tart a ravioli questions.
Wait, you know? Is a Pop-Tart a ravioli? It's a dessert ravioli. Of course it is, yes.
Well, but this is the whole, is a hot dog a sandwich? It's this argument.
I like is a Pop-Tart a ravioli? Because that actually is a ravioli. Now, is a hot dog a sandwich? I've never really found that to be nearly as fun or fascinating as the internet did.
I don't find it fun or fascinating. I'm merely saying that it's a similar argument.
I'll tell you why I don't.
Okay. Who cares?
I don't think either answer is satisfying.
Sure. I agree with
It's a hot dog.
Yeah. That's right. What like chili's a hot dog. I mean chili is chili.
Chili's a hot
chili
dog.
Might be a hot dog. In which case, if I can't say chili or turkey chili or vegetarian chili, I would say tomato soup is my favorite soup.
Love a tomato soup.
What about matzo ball soup? No one's a fan of matzo ball soup?
Love matzo ball soup. What a yes.
I mean,
love matzo ball soup. All right. I love a pasta fagioli.
I have to stop this. I have to stop this.
Love a good minestrone.
All right.
I have to stop this.
Our top five Italian soups. Let's go.
Well, the problem is
right here.
The only problem is.
Oh my God.
What's the cold one? Gazpacho.
Gazpacho is the best. I love gazpacho. Love a gazpacho. There we go. We can all agree on that. So Pat generates herself as a holographic housewife at this point and multiplies herself. Which is kind of eerie. It's basically a moment where she's like, I am everywhere. You cannot kill me. You're never leaving here kind of moment.
It's also like, that's the only reason she does it because she can't actually touch anything or pick anything up. So she's not really doing anything in the kitchen. She's just standing there making like many of herself.
It's true.
Like when she gets bigger as well. It's just menacing. But yeah. It is like kind of Wizard of Oz. You know? Like.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Even when she gets big and Sarah kind of like runs through her, but like it kind of freaks Sarah out that she ran through her. But like that's all, I mean, she can't do anything.
About this should freak Sarah out.
Right.
Because Sarah has created life. And that would be, if you did not intend to create life, that would be very scary.
Yes.
Even if you do intend to create life and you succeed, very scary.
It's a Miles Dyson situation. She doesn't know Miles, but she's the Miles Dyson of this situation.
Dr. Frankenstein situation, you know, very similar.
Yeah very similar.
Yes.
So one of the creepiest moments in this film, as far as I'm concerned, is when Pat starts singing, Mama's Gonna Buy You a Diamond Ring.
Oh, God.
Like, it's
that's
a
the song
movie.
That the dead mom sang to the children.
It's
and she
so
knows
fun.
That. Because she saw the sad home videos. Scene, a very sad scene. I would say a very emotionally affecting scene.
I thought that was a good scene.
Personally.
Yeah. You're right, guys.
I agree.
That is too good for this movie.
It's too good for this movie.
Yeah. No, it is. That's like, that's some heavy shit.
And like
having your surrogate mother project video of your real mother onto a wall and then feeling, oh yeah, there's so many layers to this.
I think that Katie Sagal is very good in this film. I think that she walked so Scarlett Johansson could run in her. I think that these, that. I don't know. I thought she was really good at this.
Let's talk about Katie.
Yeah.
All right. So I think I no longer can say I like Married with Children. I think that some people have decided that that's not acceptable anymore. But it was my favorite show for most of my life. And I watched it with my parents and I loved it. Sure. So she is my smart house in a lot of ways, right? I cannot speak critically about that show or analytically. I just, you know, unabashedly loved it. But the thing about Katie Sagal that I find so fascinating, and I find this very fascinating about the show, is you have a test case of what would happen if you were an actor in that show and it just didn't do anything after. Like David Faustino is just if you remember him, he's just a huge joke. Whereas the other three main actors in that show went on to be national treasures. Like,
huge.
How is that possible that the other three actors in that show are like critically beloved, like America's darlings?
Yes. Ed O'Neill is everyone's grandfather, basically, right? Dad or grandfather.
Yes.
I obviously, Christina Applegate
managed to pull off a somewhat believable marriage with Sofia Vergara. How is that real? Yes. Christina Applegate is
beloved in her own way too. Yeah.
I don't love Dead to Me, but I do love her. And I think she's like, you know, in Bad Moms, for instance, she's like one of the only people who could pull off that role. Like she's
people
just
love
great.
Samantha Who when that was on. That was a show that
I loved Samantha Who.
She was good in that.
And then Katie Sagal's most surprising surprising of them all, because like I believe she won an Emmy for Gemma. I believe she
for Sons of Anarchy. Yeah.
I believe she won an Emmy for that. So she is now like a gritty, hard top of the, you know, above the title. You get your show picked up if she's in it type actress who can do comedy, who can do drama, who when Roseanne's kicked out of the show, becomes John Goodman's girlfriend and the Connors. Like she's like half a step below like Mary Tyler Moore and Carol Burnett. Like she's like the closest that generation has.
Totally. And people they don't talk about her on Futurama as much as maybe they should, but like that's also another thing, right? She's Leela on that, which runs for a really long time, which is beloved. She is a multi-hyphenate. There's kind of she can do anything. It's pretty amazing.
She's a voice that like you grow up knowing her voice, at least, if not her entire self.
Totally.
I mean, you run through it real fast. Like she did 200 episodes of Married with Children. She did 100 episodes of 10 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, 100 episodes of Sons of Anarchy. She did this whole season of 400 episodes of Futurama. She did this whole series of the Connors. She's in this show Rebel right now that got canceled, but might get picked up somewhere else.
Yeah.
She is just this massive cultural entity. Yeah. And to think Smart House dwarfs them all.
Well, here's the thing about I'll just say this. The thing about 99, what is interesting is that we are catching her at a little bit of a hammock in her career, right? Because I would say that Sons of Anarchy sort of is like the next chapter, right? Like that really puts her into a different
rules.
When did that start? I don't know when that started.
2002. I looked this all up. So basically, Married with Children ends in 97.
Yeah.
99 begins Futurama, and she's that voice, and you know, as Katie Sagal, I thought, okay, this is a good, this is a great landing spot for her. This is a great way for her to prolong her career.
Yeah.
You know, I just figured everyone on that show would be would be kind of sullied forever because it was such a weird, kind of embarrassing show by the end of it.
Sure.
But great, so she found something, and did Smart House, which you know would have destroyed a lesser actress's career, but it only, you know,
it only made her stronger.
Only enhanced hers. And then 10 Simple Rules, 2002, John Ritter's wife. I mean, that's a pretty ABC show. That's a pretty big statement that Katie Sagal is going to stick around and is going to be someone who is going to be kind of a force of TV for a while. Then I don't know if she married Kurt Sutter before or before getting that show.
I'm
or
that
if
up right now.
She got that show and then married Kurt Sutter. But then she kind of, you know, Kurt Sutter lives the life to some extent. And she was on The Shield once too. So I think she did know him before or whatever. But
she marries him in 2004. So
all right. So that predates Sons of Anarchy. So he creates Sons of Anarchy and, you know, builds in this role for this actress who's never done anything like it. Yeah. And she murderfies it. and is the heart and soul of that show, and kind of proves that she's, you know, unexpectedly capable of doing capable of anything. The other role, Phil, that I do also want to highlight was Locke's ex-wife in Lost, which
that's
is a
true.
Dramatic
that's
role.
That's true.
And was a
that's
little,
true.
Little bit of a surprising place for her to show up as well. But
Helen.
That's yes, Helen. That's there. There's a lot of, you know, emotionality. In those scenes and in that relationship, that informs everything Locke does. So.
She fucking works. Like, just looking at her career, just like 92 episodes of Sons of Anarchy. She also, you know, she does 13 episodes of A to Z. She was the narrator on that show. Do you remember that show?
Great voice.
Great voice. She did an episode of This Is Us. She does 22 episodes of The Conners, as you mentioned. She did, you know, 7 episodes of Shameless. I mean, it's amazing. She's amazing. She's wonderful. Basically, the movie kind of wraps itself up because Ben says to Pat, like, you're not human. You'll never be human. Puts Pat in her place. She shrinks down. She gets super sad. Like, lightning and clouds show up and she disappears.
Well, that scene where she touches his face and she's like, you didn't feel that. And he's like, no. That's another really great emotional just little bit.
Yeah. It's like David at the end of AI when he sees all the Davids.
Oh, God. Now I'm gonna cry.
This movie predates AI. Yes. Unless LeVar
like
Burton
this movie
got a hold of Stanley Kubrick's treatment for it. Like I think they really informed Spielberg on this.
Yeah, one.
It's an homage to both AI and Ray Bradbury's short story.
All right, you want to talk about LeVar?
Yes, I want to hear your thoughts on LeVar. Let's wrap this up with LeVar, and then we'll rate the movie.
Like everybody else in America, I've always loved LeVar. I mean, he hosted Reading Rainbow, of course, and then he was on Star Trek, and I was happy that he always had this career, and he always kind of was on Roots. Obviously, I mean, you know, he is to some extent an American treasure.
To some extent.
So Alex Trebek dies. Yeah. My favorite person maybe of all time. Yeah. And before the body is cold,
oh my God,
you have LeVar out there being like, you know who would be a good host for Jeopardy? Me, LeVar Burton.
That's not how it played out. That's not how it played out.
Tell me how it played out.
You know what happened, which is that unfortunately Alex Trebek left us and a big vacuum on Jeopardy.
I already told them what happened. They know. He didn't leave us. He died.
But Twitter all of a sudden decided they took it upon themselves to figure out who should replace it. Now, Twitter should never decide anything. I think we all know that that's a bad idea, but that's what they did. And as they've been doing for the past few months since he died, they've been doing these 2-week stints of guest hosts to try to figure out who should replace him. And LeVar Burton was not on that list. And Twitter, I would say, understandably was like, he should get a shot at it. So
you are incorrect.
Can I finish? So
sorry.
So essentially what happened was this campaign to get LeVar Burton at least a guest spot for 2 weeks on Jeopardy sort of manifests itself. And LeVar runs with the ball, right? Like he gets a New York, you can shake your head all you want. LeVar Burton, he runs a New York Times, he got a New York Times piece about this. He started campaigning for himself at that point and successfully got himself a guest stint on the show. And he's going to be the host next week,
so,
I think.
So your read of this situation is that Twitter decided out of all the humans that LeVar Burton should be the host and LeVar ran with it?
Okay. First of all, of all the humans, is that's what you're. He's still a famous TV personality who hosted Reading Rainbow. He's not just a fucking guy.
Sorry. That's not the point I'm making. Twitter decided of all the TV personalities, it should be LeVar Burton, and LeVar ran with the ball.
So what you're saying to me is that LeVar saw an opportunity and seized it is your take.
No, I'm saying the opposite. LeVar Burton was the one who started the campaign.
That's what I just said to you. I don't think that's what happened, but I think it's interesting that you do. I don't know what to say to that.
You don't think what happened?
That you think that LeVar Burton was the one that said, I should be the guy?
I know he is. LeVar Burton wants Jeopardy producers to know he's the best person to host. I think my whole career has been an advertisement for being the host of Jeopardy, the former Reading Rainbow and Star Trek tells EW. This happened. And then this is what happened. He puts it out there. I'm telling you, I'm positive on the chronology of this. He puts it out there that he wants to be the host. Jeopardy then releases the list of people that are the potential guest hosts. And LeVar is not on the list. And people, when he put it out there, like LeVar should host, a lot of people like Phil Isco, for instance, were like, what a great idea.
Hold on a second. Because here's the thing, Kenny. Prior to Alex Trebek's death, everyone knew that Alex Trebek was sick. He had been sick for quite some time. So people knew that a replacement was coming. And there were many people that were sort of thrown about, and LeVar Burton's name was one of those people that was...
Because he threw it out there.
Okay.
Because he threw it out there, which isn't necessarily such a bad thing. Other people threw their names out there. Okay. He threw it out there. But he... Like, I think if you think that it went the way...
I love Emma's silence.
If you think it went the way...
I don't know what the answer is.
If you think it went the way you think it went, then it is not declassé. But I think it went the other way. Alex Trebek dies, and LeVar Burton is like, you know who would make a good host? Me.
Okay.
And then people were like, yeah, you would make a good host, I guess, even though, like, honestly, the campaign is kind of fucking ironic. Like, he is, look at the list of the people who are hosting. You have the current host of the Today Show, the current host of Good Morning America, a current 60 Minutes, like, correspondent, all these people who are the current Anderson Cooper, all these people who are currently relevant, and the people who are not are people like Katie Couric, who are massive and obvious, like, choices. And then you have LeVar Burton, who the internet was like, this would be cute too.
Here's what I hope. I hope that LeVar Burton becomes the host of Jeopardy. That being said, I hear you. If it did play out the way that you think it played out, then so be it.
Let's say it did. How do you feel?
I personally speaking, I think he would be a good host. So whether or not he's the one that brought it to people's attention or not is kind of moot. Is the way I see it.
Let's see.
But all this being said.
Okay.
All right.
Emma, what are you? Yes. I'll do it. Emma Stefanski should be the host of Jeopardy. I take it all back. Emma would actually be a great host.
Everyone's been telling me this.
This is why I think Emma should host. Laura, let's take LeVar out of the running for a second.
LeVar,
Emma, I don't. Yeah. I don't even know if this is something you're caught up in, the way we're caught up in this, obviously. Who do you think should host, Phil?
I watch Jeopardy every night.
As do I.
It's a great show.
Like a psycho.
It's great. Of the hosts that have, the guest hosts that have done it thus far, and even if you were to, I really think Anderson Cooper did a great job. I like Anderson Cooper. He's got a good, I like his personality. I like what he brings to it. I don't particularly like Ken Jennings, so I hope it's not him, but if it was to bet on it, I bet it'll be Ken Jennings. So
why don't you like Ken Jennings?
I think he's kind of a creep.
Go ahead.
I think he's kind of a creep. I don't like his Twitter presence particularly. I think there's kind of this shticky thing that he does that he's kind of putting on a facade for us of like what he thinks people want Ken Jennings to be like, but I think the real guy is actually kind of gross. But that's, I mean,
he's
that's
a phony. He's a damn phony.
He's a damn phony. You know who's not a phony? Emma Stefanski. Emma Stefanski should be the host of Jeopardy.
I'm an open book. It's Emma, all out there.
Emma is my second choice.
Yeah, who's your first choice?
Ken Jennings. I'll tell you why.
Oh, God,
I'll tell you why.
God damn it.
And this is
this episode's been about soup and Jeopardy.
There is literally only one thing. There are two things I want out of a Jeopardy host.
Okay.
One is I want them to be, I want to believe, like critically, the thing about Alex Trebek is I believed that he knew the answer to every question. Okay. And that when he, you know, moved, when he said, yes. this is wrong, I believed him. Or he said, he waited for more clarification. I believed
him. Sure.
He knew the pronunciation for everything. I also know Ken Jennings knows the answer to every question.
Okay.
Buzzy Cohen probably also knows the answer to every question.
I liked Buzzy.
As well.
I liked Buzzy.
The other thing I want them to be able to do is to be able to read at a reasonable pace. Buzzy Cohen is incapable of that. Buzzy Cohen, I hated him. Read so fast, it was impossible to like take it in. His hosting gig was torture.
He was, I thought the guy favorite from 60 Minutes was torture because he read it so slowly.
Too slow. Bill was too slow. I agree. The other one who I would, be down for, yes, bringing it back to the world of television and child stars is Maya Bialik, who I think did a great job, and I also believe she knows most of the answers.
Yeah.
So and she also was fun. I like her. I liked her.
Let's rate Smart House. Emma, I don't know if you know how our rating system goes, but we rate films from 0 to 99, 0 being the worst, obviously 99 being the highest, 50% being the threshold with which we would recommend the film. We do a ranking before the podcast. Well, actually, for you, you'd get to rank this in 99. So how much you loved it in 99, which I'm assuming is 99, but just whatever. And then we do a ranking before the podcast and after the podcast. So like whether or not the podcast actually changed your opinion one way or the other. So I'll go first so you can think about it for a second. Before this podcast, I was at a 40. I thought it was fine. But then, first of all, I thought about it over the last 24 hours. And then we've been talking about it. And I'm at a 60 now. I think that Smart House is actually pretty solid.
Jump,
I'm not going to lie.
Jump, the house is jumping.
So that's
what
where
I'm here
at.
For.
Kenny,
hey, do you want to? Hey, man,
where are you at?
This is your reputation, not mine. All right, so I was
what
at I was at a 12 before this podcast.
Oh my God.
But I no longer can be at a 12. I no longer can be at a 12. That is. In honor of my favorite DCOM, the 13th year, I'm not anywhere near a 12 anymore. I'm at a 1. I mean, it's just like I'm much higher. This was such a fun podcast. This is such a fun movie. I could imagine watching this like 10 times, knowing every line, like really getting into the silliness of it. I think they're weirdly, we kind of hit on some moments that were too good for that movie. And I'm kind of wondering like what happens when you're a writer who's writing something that's like kind of schlocky and you happen upon something like super brilliant, you keep it in because like the brilliant is so atonal.
Right.
Like one of my favorite, and I only read about this, but one of my favorite moments in TV history, that I later would watch is one season finale of the show Las Vegas. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, sure. The James Caan television show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Laura Flynn Boyle played like the villain, mm-hmm, who was like taking down the family.
Mm-hmm.
And after she succeeded in the finale, she's on the rooftop of their casino talking about how this whole city's going to be hers. And then a stiff wind blows her off the roof across the strip and through the glass window of an adjacent casino.
That's incredible.
And that's how her character dies. And it's just like, when they thought of that, like some people might have been like, that's too good for us. We can't do that. Like we're Las Vegas. We don't do anything that amazing. But they did. Good for them.
Oh, no. I got to go find this clip.
Yeah. I feel that way about The End of the Mist. Like, I feel like I think The Mist pretty much sucks until the best ending in film history.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Where are you now? What is your rating? Where are you now?
35, which I think is really like a healthy improvement for a film like this.
All right.
35. You, fuck it. I'm going 45. Fuck it. I would never tell 45. Someone to watch. I would never
so
tell
close
someone
to watch. 50.
I would never tell someone to watch this movie because I care about my reputation, unlike Yuko. But I think that this is about as fun a movie as you can watch without actually saying, "Go ahead and watch this with me," which I won't do for my kids. Go ahead, Emma.
What was your rating in 99? First of all,
okay in 99 when I saw this movie, yeah, it was probably a 90.
Okay.
I probably was like, oh my God, this
I respect
is...
your restraint.
Because I mean, by then I'd seen The Land Before Time, so I knew how good
you do perfection. You know,
yeah, these things can be. So I was like, all right, well, it's not quite at that level. I really loved it as a kid. Yeah. Before About the Pond, I was probably at like a 75. Okay. Let's see. I'm really trying to. It's such a large range.
Yeah, it is.
And obviously, it's not going to get below 50 for me. So that's right out. Has my opinion changed? I don't think either of you could convince me to like this movie less than I do. But I also don't think that I can be very objective about this movie because of how ingrained it is in my mind. Mm-hmm. Maybe a 70 because of the plot holes that we've discovered.
That's fair. Okay.
I'll say 70.
So here's a question. Do you like this film more or less than Treasure Planet?
Less than Treasure Planet. I mean,
love Treasure Planet.
I do.
Yes.
And Treasure Planet, similarly, something that I really can't be objective about. I think I might have mentioned this to them when I talked to them about it, but like they kept bringing up the Goo Goo Dolls song right smack dab in the middle of the movie. Yeah. And to me, that's like, that's where that the song goes. That's now we've had the discussion between Jim and John Silver about something.
Yeah.
And now we get a montage of the ship with the John Resnick song playing. Duh. What else are you going to put there?
John Resnick song.
Here's something that I've deduced about you, Emma, knowing you for literally an hour and a half.
Over the course of two podcasts.
Is that the only time you were on Plane Check?
No, I've been on a few times.
What else are you on for?
I was on for The Weight of Water.
Oh, that's right.
Karen Hahn. That was my first appearance. And then I did the worst.
That's
Catherine
the Catherine Bigelow
movie.
That movie is not a good movie.
Okay.
I don't remember that movie. I didn't remember that movie during the podcast. I had forgotten. I watched it.
Oh, I've been there.
What was the other one that you were on for Blank Check? There was something else. I can't remember what it
was. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Of course, yes.
They only bring you on for the
only the best. They only bring you on for the best.
The bangers.
But you got
and
Treasure
then
Planet.
I did do a Patreon for them for Thor Ragnarok, and that was really fun because I liked that movie a lot. Yeah.
That's incredible.
But yes, Treasure Planet was the first one of the main thing that I actually liked that movie. I was like, if you guys don't have me on for this, I'm going to be upset.
I'm out. Here's what I have deduced between Smart House and Treasure Planet is that logic be damned when it comes to Emma Stefanski, right?
Exactly.
Like, just don't worry about logic. No. It's a vibe.
Just vibes.
Just vibes.
I don't know how old you are, Emma, and I don't want to presuppose anything, though I assume you're exactly 10 years younger than us. So I did presuppose.
Okay. I don't know how old you guys are, so I don't know how right that is.
52.
It's probably. We're in our 60s.
That's why you don't like Smart House. You're too old.
We do a Patreon on the films of 1989.
We do.
And our 1989 takes feel very similar to your Treasure Planet Smart House takes, which is like sometimes, not every 1999 movie, but some movies that like, we just can't be that objective about. Little Monsters is exactly what I'm thinking of. Little Monsters is the one that I'm like, you can't talk me off this fucking Little Monsters
ledge.
It's not really a ledge. You can't talk me off this Little Monsters high horse.
Sure.
I love Little Monsters. I don't care what makes sense. I don't care if it doesn't work. It's mine. And I will not let go. You will pry it from my cold, dead hands. And I think and we have some people who are, you know, of your, you know, much younger than us generation, like Karen Hahn, on every once in a while, who just have different relationships with these movies than we do. So
yeah, she came out for Fantasia 2000, and that was sort of, that was a film that for her when she was a kid, there was a sort of, that movie's crazy, but it's crazy in a completely different way.
Yeah. So much fun on that episode.
Yeah, that was the best. It was tremendous.
And then she came on for Topsy Turvy, and we just went 10 rounds on that one.
You and her went 10 rounds. I was very much on the same page with Karen Hahn for
that. I think that movie is. Not the best.
Yeah, I know. I do love that Kenny and I, our introduction to Karen Hahn, and you'll appreciate this, Emma, is that Kenny and I were both in New York
to record. She's the coolest.
We figured out that we were going to do an episode with David and an episode with Karen and an episode with Ben Hosley. We get to the office. We're sitting outside in the hallway. Ben calls me and he's like, "Hey man, so I really fucked up and I'll be there in an hour and 10 minutes." So we sat in the hallway with Karen Hahn waiting for over an hour for Ben Hosley to show up, which is just the perfect way to be introduced to everybody involved in that show. Yeah. We love them all to death and it was just the best. I'm very curious. Next week, Emma, we are covering the film Titus. I don't know. Have you seen the film Titus?
Yes, I have seen Titus.
This is why I was hoping that we could talk
Anthony
to you
Hopkins.
Briefly. Yes. And
oh
Jessica Lange.
God.
What a reaction.
Maybe the best reaction we've had thus far. Next week we have Rochelle Lefebvre coming on to talk about Titus, but we have you here now and I would love to hear your thoughts on
Titus.
Yeah,
what's going on?
One of the weirdest, coolest movies I ever watched in school for no reason. I don't know why we weren't even talking about Titus Andronicus. We watched it in a history class.
I can't believe they show that to you in school.
That movie
Your
is not
teachers,
okay for kids.
Where did you go to school?
Well, I did go to private school, so they could sort of get past. I went to Norfolk Academy in Norfolk, Virginia. I don't know. It's
like
a nice place.
You mumbled that on
I
my...
I was feel weird saying it. Yeah. Just in case.
I know.
Can hear me.
I'm so happy that I didn't go to private school, that I just went to a...
You didn't end up like me, liking Smart House.
No, I didn't. I don't have to be embarrassed about having gone to an all-white public school in Westchester County.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's a completely different animal. Yeah.
In the town that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton moved to. So, it's really nice.
Across the bear.
The view from the moral high ground up here is pretty nice.
So you were how old were you when you saw Titus, Emma? In school, probably?
I mean, it was like, it was senior year. So I would have been 18 by then.
Okay. It's a pretty crazy fucking movie. Like I love it, but it's a bonkers film.
That one to me, it's like, I can't like recommend that movie to normal people because I just don't think that they, I can you have like friends in your life where you're like, you're not going to like this. Like, it's the same sort of thing with like, someone I know just watched Bram Stoker's Dracula for the first time.
Yep.
The Coppola one.
Yep.
And she was like, not into it at all. And I love that movie. I love that movie so much. And I love even more like all of the stuff, you know, that you figure out when you go immediately on the Wikipedia page after watching it.
Well, that's a good comparison too with Titus, because they both are living in a very theatrical, very sort of like over the top, but also like aggressively violent.
Yes.
Lots of bloodshed, lots of sex. Like they're both just like dialed way the fuck up. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's weird. Because it's being weird, like it's heightened and crazy and melodramatic because that's what it wants to be. And if you criticize it for being any of those things, and you can't because it is that. Like, yes, you're right.
Totally.
Oh, I love Titus.
I mean, we love Titus. Titus is an amazing, amazing piece of work. And just one of those, I mean, just for us, just one of those 1999, it's not really a gem because it's so fucking massive. It's like a big piece of like it's a big piece of like really expensive limestone, but it's one of those things that I don't think I ever would have watched if we didn't do this podcast. So I'm very happy that we did, and I hope everyone does watch, even though it's three hours. It's
It's 3 hours and you can only find it on
singular,
DVD.
Singular, nothing like.
But that too. It's not streaming anywhere, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a masterpiece. It's Julie Taymor's first film. It's a wild ride. We talk a lot about on the episode about Julie's career, the ups and downs of it. It's a great episode. It's a great movie. If you can, the movie.
Great
find,
guests.
Yeah, it's
our second favorite guest after
our second favorite guest to Emma Stavansky, but it definitely was. It's on Amazon. You can buy it for like fucking less than $10. Highly recommend if you have a DVD player to watch it. It's really, really good. I mean, more than anything, Emma, thank you so much for being here to talk with us about Smart House.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so excited when you invited me on. I was immediately like, okay, which movie? Which one?
And then I sent you a list of really weird movies and you picked Smart House. There you go.
I was looking through. I was like, man, I don't know if I've watched any of these. And then I saw Smart House. I was like, okay, well then.
No, there. It's a no-brainer, obviously. But you're going to come back and you're going to talk about an X-Files episode with me. So I'm super excited about that. And yes. And hopefully you'll come back and talk about another movie with us in the future.
I would love to. That would be so awesome. Much fun.
One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeits1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Also, please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits. Thank you to Ernie and Will for producing our episode, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our artwork and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.